Morning, everyone. Here I am off the interchange bench with the pastor going down with some dreaded disease. Got the call yesterday, so put the boots on, run out onto the field, and here I am. Now look, because I got a late call up for this, I have recycled some elements of this sermon from one I did about 8 years ago. But what I'm banking on is that 8 years is a long time, and if you're a regular church attender, you've probably heard about 400 sermons between then and now. So this is going to seem really fresh and new to you. That's if you happen to be there on that day. So what I wanted to start off today, because it's Father's Day, and we've had a lovely father's emphasis so far, I want to tell you a little bit about my father. That's me as a little boy. I'm the one on the left. with my dad. Now, I thought I'd tell you about him because most of you won't have encountered my dad because I reckon he's been to this church a sum total of two times. One was the day that we got married in 1990, and the other was when Sarah got dedicated in this church in 1997 or so, 96. He wasn't here for Thomas's dedication, which is kind of ironic because my dad's name is Tom, which is where my son Thomas gets his name from, but he wasn't there on that day. My dad is a writer. That's what he does for a living. He's made a living writing for television, mostly. In fact, I'd say the main thing that the older folk in the church might remember from television that he did was a mini-series. You can tell how old it is by the font and the graphics and everything. A Town Like Alice. Which he wrote, adapted from the Neville Shute book back in the late 70s, went on television in the early 80s, won an Emmy Award. Not that he won it, but the show won it. He won an Australian Writers Guild Award for it. So that was something that he's very proud of in his career. And as I was searching for visuals for this, I found this awesome thing that A Town Like Alice, apparently fairly big in Sweden, where it is known as Fem Svarta Hons, which, incredibly enough, translates as five black chickens. and I'm just racking my brain as to how is that A Town Like Alice, five black chickens? Anyway, that was an awesome find that I found last night when I was looking for graphics. I was thinking about my dad, and I was thinking about what has my dad... We've sort of talked about it with the interview on the couch. What has my dad given me? And I don't mean like what did he give me for Christmas in 1977. I mean, what did he sort of pass on to me? How did he shape me to be the person I am? What sort of things did he give to me? It's probably a whole lot of things, but there's a couple that I wanted to, I guess, kind of highlight. One is because he's a writer, my dad values words and books and story. So in our household, we had a house of books. Books are it's really important around our home. Bookshops were like hallowed ground for him. It was a very important thing. And I feel he's kind of disappointed with how I turned out in life because in the latter part of high school, I started going down the math science stream. And he's going, oh, no, you should be doing, the arts and that kind of thing. And I'm going, no, I'm better at this. And he still sort of asked the question about his grandkids. Any of them going to be a writer? Any of them going to be a writer? Nope. Sorry. But I can say that because of being involved in the church environment, I've had the opportunity to do some writing. We do Road to Bethlehem every year, and a lot of the script that shows up for that, I've got some responsibility for that. So I can say to him, okay, well, I'm not a writer, but I've been involved with putting this play together that over 100,000 people have seen. How about that? That's my little claim to fame with him. So that's one thing he passed on, just a love of story, a love of words. Now, another thing he passed on, which is kind of a sillier thing, but it's still kind of important to what I'm going to talk about today, is that my dad and mum got married. They were born and bred in Queensland. They got married. But Dad wanted to be a writer. So in order to do that, he had to move to Melbourne because he wanted to get a job with Crawford Productions. Some of you might remember Crawford Productions because they produced a lot of the TV that came out in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Crawford's no longer exists as an entity that produces television. In fact, where the Crawford's building used to be in Box Hill, it's now Bunnings. So, bye Crawford's. So he had to come to Melbourne. So, and he came to Melbourne. Crawford's was actually in Abbotsford at that stage, I think, then. And I reckon probably day one that he got to Melbourne and went into the workplace. So he's come to Melbourne, and the first thing that Melbourne people do when you're a new person in town is they go, okay, what football team are you going to follow? Come on, what football team? What football team? Because it's very important in Melbourne. And weirdly enough, the Crawford's house, like Hector Crawford, he's a big Collingwood man, and all the people, all the sycophants in Crawford Productions, they're all Collingwood people too. So there's a lot of pressure on my dad to become a Collingwood supporter. But he said no. He said, well, you know, I was living in Camberwell at the time, which is just near Hawthorn. So he said, no, I think I'm going to follow Hawthorn, which is a big call at that time, because this is 1967. And up to that point, you know, Collingwood was the big club and they'd won a whole lot of premierships. Hawthorn had won a total of one premiership up until that point. Several years later, there's another 12 premierships in the Hawthorn trophy cabinet. So it was a pretty good call. He was a very smart man. He's very prescient, very ahead of his time. So he made a very good call. Now, that sounds like a really trivial story for me to tell you, and it is. But it kind of ties in with what I wanted to speak about today. And because it's Father's Day, I thought, yeah, let's talk about sport a bit. You know, dads like sport. A lot of dads like sport. So I wanted to bring a bit of sport to what we're talking about in the sermon today. But before I get there, I wanted to take, I'm going to show you a photo of a Hawthorn player from the 70s, Peter Knights, who my dad loved. But I want to take a little left turn before I get into the sporting part of it. I want to go to Athens, which, you know, still has a sporting heritage because that's where the Olympics come from. Athens. I want to take you back to Athens about 2,000 years ago, where a man called Paul rolled into town. Now, a lot of you are familiar with Paul's story. He was a man who's responsible for the spread of Christianity in the first few decades after Jesus went back to heaven. He was like a super evangelist. So he traveled a lot and he converted a lot of people. He told them about Jesus and he set up churches and then he moved on and he did the same thing again all over the place. And there's many, many places in Europe that he managed to get to and plant the seeds of the Christian faith in Europe. Now, then he came to Athens and he wanted to do the same thing. Now, Athens then was, you know, a pretty important city to affect for the cause of Christ. And Paul was a very strategic thinker and planner, and he knew that if he could win the city, the culture kind of flows downstream from cities. So winning the cities over was very important for spreading the message across the world. So he went to Athens, and Athens had kind of an avenue or a place where people could go and talk about ideas. If you turn to Acts 17, there's a great bit of commentary in here. Luke wrote this book, Acts. And if you look at Acts 17 in verse 21, Paul just adds in a little comment here about the people in Athens, which I think is a little bit hilarious, actually, because he's commenting on the culture that existed at the time in Athens. And so this is in brackets. He's written, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. So there's a little bit of a subtext there. These lazy Athenians, they just sit around and do nothing. They just talk about stuff all day. They don't work, they don't eat, they just do nothing but talk. Anyway, so Paul had an opportunity to stand up and talk to the people about Jesus. But because he was very strategic in what he did, he wanted some way of linking what the Athenians were already doing and valuing and worshipping to the story about Jesus. He didn't want to just go in and say, you're all sinners, you're all doomed to die, but Jesus has saved you. He didn't start off cold turkey like that. He wanted to start where they were, lead them to where he wanted them to go. So he did some research. He wandered around town to see what they valued and what they was important to them. And he found, if you go backwards a little bit from where we just were, in verse 16, while Paul was waiting for them, the other people with him, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he looked around and he saw, man, there's a lot of idols around here. These people must really love their idols. And then he started thinking, I wonder if I can tie that in to what I want to talk to them about. And sure enough, he did. That's exactly the procedure that he went through. So instead of standing up and condemning them for their idol worship, he started where they were, and this is what he said to them in this famous speech. He said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship. I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown god." So what the Athenians did was they had a lot of gods, a lot of idols that they were worshipping, and they were worried that they'd forget one. So they thought, well, we'll put one here for one that we don't know about yet, and we'll worship that too, which is curious. But Paul picked up and went, ha-ha, the unknown god. I'm going to tell you about the unknown god. And so he did. And he told the story of the creator god and how he has come to save us and how he's shown that this is the fact by raising Jesus from the dead. And that was his starting point. He built that bridge from where they were to where he wanted to take them so he could have an impact on their thinking. He could build on what they were already doing. So I say that by way of introduction because I always wonder if somebody like Paul came to Melbourne in this day and age, what would he look at? What would he observe? What would he see that he would go, aha, this is my starting point for how to reach them with the story about Jesus? What would he do if he came to Melbourne? What would he see? What would they value? Well, one thing he would notice is that the people of Melbourne, generally speaking, like sport. In fact, there's been a number of times Melbourne has been voted the sporting capital of the world because we're so devoted to sport. And if you did any further research, you'd know that out of all the sports, the AFL is the biggest one that is in Melbourne. In fact, if you look all around the world at all the domestic sporting leagues, there's only five that average over 30,000 people a week per game. And AFL is one of those. It comes in at number four on the list. It used to be number three, but then GWS and Gold Coast came along and dragged down all the averages. So thanks for nothing, guys. We used to look, top three is pretty impressive. Behind the NFL in America and the Bundesliga in Germany. Now we're behind the Premier League in England. Anyway, I digress. So he would see that sport matters in this town, as my dad found out when he showed up and people said, what team are you going to follow? So, and then Paul could look at the behaviour of people who go to sporting events and see, I wonder how I could tie this to the gospel story. I wonder how I would connect these two things. And maybe he would say, well, when I see your crowds of people, there's a lot of worship going on. There's hands in the air, there's excitement, there's passion, there's worship for these people out on the field. Maybe you tie that in, people of Melbourne, I see that in every way you're a very worshipful people. Let me tell you about a true champion who will never let you down, etc., etc., etc. Maybe go that way. Maybe he would see the behaviour of the crowds when the umpires show up, because they get a fair bit of reaction as well, don't they? Especially Razor Ray. Maybe you would say, look, people of Melbourne, I see in many ways you really care about what's right and what's wrong. And this really matters a lot to you. Let me tell you about the God who made us all and who determines what is right and wrong. Maybe go that way. Let me tell you what I reckon is a great way to go. What has the most impact on me when I try and connect these two concepts? To do so, I'm getting out of Facebook. Always a terrible idea. There's another team that I follow the Hawthorn Football Club in Melbourne, but there's a team in the English Premier League I follow called Tottenham Hotspur. And they're an okay team. They never have a lot of success in the last 20, 30 years. And, after every game, there's a lot of ranting and raving that goes on Facebook. Maybe you've seen that. I don't know. So they had a loss last weekend, and these are the sort of comments that I noticed on my Facebook feed about another loss for Tottenham. It's going to have to be so much better next week. Not the first time we've had a slow start to the season, but that was one of our worst performances in years. Another one, we lacked any creativity. Strikers standing still, not looking for spaces to run into. Very poor. We have become so boring and predictable. All teams know how to play against us now. Now, what do you notice there about the pronouns? We, it's us, it's our. Isn't that interesting? Because last time I checked, supporters don't put on the boots, run out on the park, pass the ball around and kick goals. And yet, we see how connected people feel to what's happening out on the field. They really, really identify with it. And when you deconstruct that, what's actually going on in a sporting endeavour, or just even the connection between these people and their club, or myself and the club that I follow in Melbourne. Like, when it comes to Hawthorn, I don't live in Hawthorn. I don't know any of the players. What's my actual connection with that? And all of us could ask that question if you follow a sporting club. What's my real connection here to this club? It's all a bit arbitrary. It's all a bit just randomly chosen and then committed to for the rest of your life. There's no genuine connection there. It's often sort of shrouded in antiquity and then just stuck with forever from generation to generation without any decent reason at the start of it. And also, if you just deconstruct what happens on the sporting field itself, like in AFL, it's all about this bunch of guys with the oval ball kicking it between them big tall sticks more times than the other guy. The other guys. And you think, well, why does that matter? That seems fairly arbitrary. You know, it could have been set up in countless other ways, or we could not have bothered in the first place. Does it really matter if the ball went between the big sticks or not in the great big scheme of life? So it's all very arbitrary. And yet, we see people deeply invested in the outcome of what happens on the field. It's a puzzling thing why it means so much to so many people what's happening out on the field. Something that the supporters have no control over, no real input to, and yet so deeply invested. And I think the significant thing about that is that we are hardwired to share in and connect with the achievements of other people. I think God has given us this. This is one of the things that God has given us. He has hardwired us to connect to and share in the achievements of others. And look, it doesn't even just apply to sport. Just over 50 years ago, these three blokes were the first to make it to the moon. We've got Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and the other guy. His name's Mike Collins, for those of you playing at home. Massive achievement. And Mike Collins was interviewed about this, and he said something that just really struck with what I was thinking about when I was thinking about this concept. He said, after the flight of Apollo 11, the three of us went on a round-the-world trip. Wherever we went, people, instead of saying, well, you Americans did it, they said, we did it, meaning humankind did it, we, the human race. And I'd never heard people in all different countries use the word we, so emphatically, whether it was Europeans, Asians, Africans. Wherever we went, it was we finally did it. And I thought that was a wonderful thing. And it is a wonderful thing. It shows that we are hardwired to revel in and to own the achievements of other people. Now, why is that a significant thing? It's a significant thing because God knew what was going to be needed for us to be saved. He knew that we can't save ourselves. We can try and be good, we can try and do the right things, but we don't save ourselves. We can never save ourselves. It takes Jesus to win the victory for us. There's a great passage in Romans chapter 3 about this very thing. No, Romans is this way. That's this way. So Paul writes about this concept. I'll give you the short version up here. So he summarizes kind of the gospel story when he says, there's no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ. So we're all lost if we're left to our own devices, but we all win because of the victory that has been won for us by Jesus. And then he says, where then is boasting? What can we say about ourselves? What can we say? Yes, I did so well. I did so well. Where's the boasting in that? It is excluded. No boasting there. We have nothing about which we can boast. And that is the reality of it. Imagine, as I said, we've been hardwired to revel in the achievements of others. Imagine if all we could do was glory in our own achievements. You know, if somebody else achieved something, we just went, that's nice. And that's as excited as we got. Imagine if that's how we were hardwired. Clearly we're not. If you go to the MCG on a busy day, you'll see people hardwired completely differently. Passionate, excited, overjoyed or devastated, depending on the particular outcome. God has given us that part of ourselves that is able to glory in the achievements of someone else. So I imagine Paul coming to Melbourne and saying, people of Melbourne, I see that you respond with great passion to the achievements of your sportsmen and women. I see that your sports heroes serve you well and make you feel proud and excited and victorious by their wins. I would like to tell you about another champion who served you even better in a conflict of even greater magnitude and significance than this game. I'd like to think so, because I believe it is for that reason that God gave us this characteristic in our nature. I believe it is for that moment when we see Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane taking on your sins, my sins, the sins of the world. And he had the choice. He could either step up or step down. And he took those sins in his own body, took them all the way to the cross, all the way to death. And the last thing he said was, "It is finished." And then days later, the stone is rolled away. Jesus is alive again, victorious over Satan, sin, and death. And that's when we can say, where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law, but thanks be to God. He gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. He gives us the victory. The victory is ours. God gives it to us. And we share fully and deeply in it, not just for a day or a week or a month. This is the win. This is the triumph that is ours today, tomorrow, and forevermore. Jesus has won this victory, and our Father has given the victory to us. So as we celebrate Father's Day, there might be some giving of gifts or messages of thanks to our fathers, but let's remember this gift that the Father has given to us.